Hi, everyone. Jacqueline Nolas here. As a special treat this week, instead of doing Chapter 15 as planned, instead we have a live episode recording that we did at the ODSC East Conference. And so Chapter 15 will be next episode, and instead enjoy this live recording.
I think you should build a career.
Welcome to Build a Career in Data Science. I'm your host, Jacqueline Nolas.
And I'm also your host, Emily Robinson.
This podcast is a data download into all the non-technical knowledge and skills you need to succeed in a data science career. In season one, each episode is about a chapter of our book, also called Build a Career in Data Science. Although not this one, because this is a special live episode for ODSC. So it's not a chapter. You can buy the book at bestbook.cool and get 40% off with the code BUILDBOOK40%. With a percent symbol. But if you don't have to buy the book yet to get enjoyment out of this episode.
But you should buy the book. It's a good book.
Yeah. Yeah. Come on. So this week, as a special live episode, we are going to talk about a thing that happens a lot, which is you are searching for a data science job and it's not going so great. And we're going to talk all about that.
Yeah. So our book is split up into really like two parts. The first part about getting a data science job and the second part about succeeding in it. And we have lots of tips, and we've done in previous podcast episodes about how to, you know, get your resume in good shape, what kind of jobs you want to apply for. But as Jacqueline said, I thought it'd be really good for us to like synthesize this, right? If you've been on the data science job market, you know, you feel like you've looked up stuff and it's just not working. What can you do? How can you get that job?
Yeah. And I think most of our book is kind of like the positive critical path of like, and then you do this and then you do this. And then this happens. Hooray. And there's not that much, but what if it doesn't work? Which is actually a very real thing that happens all the time. So I'm excited about this subject. So the first bullet note I have in my list of notes on this topic is, well, okay, so maybe actually I take that back. Maybe can you talk a little bit, Emily, about like what are the different ways your data science career job search could be failing? Like where are the pain points here in the process?
Yeah. And I feel like this is really important to hone in on because it can let you know, okay, what parts do I maybe need to work on? So as in, it might be that you're applying for a lot of jobs and you're not hearing back at all. It's just going into this black hole. So that's one way. It could be that you're applying to jobs and you're getting some first round interviews, but not really progressing past that. Maybe you're failing the technical test, but you're doing well in the behavioral. Or sometimes it could be you even get like all the way to the finals and things just seem to not be working out. You just can't make it over. So I really think it's pretty much at any point in the process that, I guess even an earlier starting point, maybe you're not finding jobs to apply to. Like you're looking for jobs and you're like, I'm just not finding any that I think I'd be qualified for and I'd want to do. So there's a lot of points along the process where you can be getting frustrated.
Yeah. And I think all those, they're all different, right? Like the reasons why it may not be working if you can't find the job is different than if you can't land the final interview versus like they're all very different. And that leads me to my first bullet point I have in my notes, which I've like mentally underlined and like bolded three times, which is this is a problem solving exercise. If you are looking for a data science job and you can't find one that like is well suited and you can't get it, then something is going on and it is your job to try and figure out what is going on. And that's what data science is, right? It's like trying to figure out why is your code producing NAs? You know, why is the data having weird trends? This is all problem solving stuff. And the best thing you can do is view this as a problem solving exercise. Now, that's hard because it ties in with your emotions and ego, right? Because it's very personal when things aren't working. And sometimes people do things like say, I'm not finding the data, like I'm not getting hired for the data jobs I want. I must be a failure and I'll never get a job. And they really aggressively beat themselves up. Or maybe the reverse, which is they beat everyone else up. Like I can't get a job because everyone out there doesn't know what true good data science is. And they're all blah. And neither of those are good. And neither of those help you get to the core. What is the thing you can fix here? And it's like a lot of this is just kind of moving past the like mental barriers and really just trying to tackle it like a problem.
Yeah. And I think this is something like that we've focused on in some previous episodes too. So we've had one on data science failures, talked a lot about the emotions. And also another part of getting a job people do sometimes is making a data science portfolio of projects. And I think people often focus on the mechanics of that, but not about the emotions around, like, why is it hard to make public work, to finish projects? And so I think it's what you're saying, Jacqueline, exactly on point, like recognizing the emotions and like looking at them and accepting them, because that's the only way you're going to be able to, you know, do the more productive path of like, okay, let me figure out how I have this problem. How can I solve it?
Yeah. And I will say, and this has come up a lot in this podcast, I am a high anxiety person, which means 2 weeks into any job hunt, when I can't find a job after 2 weeks, I'm like, well, I will never find a job. I'm just destined to not have jobs. And that's never the case. But that's something I have to recognize about myself of like, hey, no, I gotta see past my own anxieties and kind of look at the bigger picture.
Yeah. So with that, shall we dive into like analyzing that funnel of failure different points. Okay. So let's say that, I guess sort of like the second part, like let's say you're applying to a bunch of places and you're not hearing back anything, right? You're getting no replies, or maybe you're getting a few rejections, but you're not getting the first round interview. So there, I think there's really a couple things that's informative there, which is one, which jobs are you applying to? And two, how are you presenting yourself when you apply to it? So which jobs are you applying to? I guess my bold underlined note here is the data scientist job title. So I want to talk about that a little bit, because I think sometimes people getting into data science like really want that title. They fix it out. They're like, I don't want to be a data analyst. I don't want to be a business intelligence. I want to be a data scientist. And the hard part is like, one, this is not consistent across companies, what that title means. So that actually isn't that informative for the type of work you're doing. But the other part is, I think over the past couple of years, that's really starting to not be an entry-level title. And if you're coming out from undergraduate or a boot camp, I think it can be pretty rare to find a data scientist job that doesn't expect a couple years of experience working with data. So if you really want that title, I think you're narrowing down a lot the types of jobs you'd be a good fit for. And you're excluding jobs that like you actually would learn a lot. And so I don't think it even makes sense beyond like what jobs you can get from what jobs you would want. I don't think it makes sense to do it based on the title.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. And I also think that this area of like, I submit 1,000 resumes and I can't find, no one's biting. I feel like that's maybe the most common thing, problem I've heard in the, like of these funnel issues. I feel like this is the most common. Maybe it's because of the top of the funnel, but like, I do think it's very, very common of a problem. And I would say, I agree with you, Emily, that everything focusing on like, I want to have to be a data scientist, or I have to be at like a Fortune 500 company, or yeah. I have to be at like a FAANG. Like you can really oftentimes people like get very specific, and sometimes you gotta, you know, start somewhere else. And sometimes, yeah, you will have more fun at a company that's not, you know, one of the Facebook, Googles, whatever. I would also say that this more than maybe any other part is one where it really helps to know one data scientist. Because I think one data scientist would be able to look at your resume. And if they, you know, they're close enough, they trust you, whatever, they could effectively say, hey, look, you're missing, you don't have enough experience. Or, hey, you don't know any modern languages. Or, like, they would be able to give you that assessment. And so knowing one data scientist is immensely more valuable than knowing zero. And so I would try and find who that person could be, because I think they would be able to provide that insight of like, okay, what do you need to change? And I would also say that if you are struggling here, it's possible that it's like, oh, you just need to rearrange your resume or even that. But like a lot of times the fixes are more structural. Like you have to go learn another skill, or like spend 6 months doing blah, 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 or apply to a different type of job for it. They may not be like, just edit the Word document in a little bit and then suddenly this works out.
Yeah, I think that's especially true in terms of editing your resume. I think that's a great point. Like, get a data science look over it. There also is a ton of good advice on the internet, honestly, like put things in bullet points, talk about your impact, like quantify, right? So if you haven't like looked at any of that stuff, I would recommend it, because I think that can make some improvements. But and that's a much quicker fix than like spending 6 months learning a new skills. But I think Jacqueline's also right. It might be it doesn't matter how you package it, either because you're applying to the wrong jobs, or you haven't really thought about like learning R or Python, that could be the issue there. I also want to make one point on the like sending out 1,000 resumes to companies. I've actually never done that. And I think that can be fairly ineffective, especially for entry-level jobs, because it's so easy. They get a ton of applications, like just like thousands, especially at the more popular company. And it's just really easy for your application to get lost in that. versus if you can use your network and have someone either give you a formal referral or even just tell you a little bit more about the job so you can tailor your cover letter. That can be like applying to a couple jobs that way. You might end up getting more interviews than applying for 1,000 jobs. So I wouldn't say it's like, oh, it's all else equal. You know, if I have a 2% chance at any job, I should send out as many applications as possible. Like, no, because you're sending out so many, you can't make them as good. You can't make them as tailored. And they're likely to just end up in a huge pile of other people's resumes.
Okay, yes, that is correct. But as a person who has anxiety and struggles during the job hunt, I will say it's midnight. I have these anxieties. Nothing feels better than just sending my resume out to like, well, at least I did something. Like, it is not probably effective, but it is weirdly therapeutic for me.
I think that's where it's good to think about. What are the things you're doing that feel productive, right? Like, oh, I'm going to check every couple hours what new jobs are listed. Like, is that actually the most, you know, I feel like this is like doing the kind of easy, feel good, like quick win work versus maybe a little bit of the deeper reflection work.
And on that point, I've had to like limit myself because I know I check, like I need to check LinkedIn once every 3 days instead of twice a day because it's not helpful to check every 6 hours to see if there's new data science jobs.
Yeah. I also like, I missed that Jacqueline added a bullet and said the process of getting an interview is BS. I think you want to talk about that, Jacqueline?
Yeah. Oh, I was going to use the full bad words, but it's nonsense. Oh, okay. It is nonsense. The process isn't fair to you, the person applying for jobs, because, for instance, they use computers to screen resumes. And the computers, well, if you put neural network instead of TensorFlow, the way that someone inputted what they're looking for in the job technically didn't say neural network, it said TensorFlow, and so you didn't matter. Like, that's not fair or right. And similarly, like, HR people may review your thing, and they may not understand that your research as a graduate student was almost the exact same as what a data science would do. And like, you'd be a great candidate. They don't understand that. And like, sometimes the postings are already closed, but they still show up on LinkedIn and stuff. There's all these ways where they getcha, and that's just how it is. And you gotta just accept that. I guess with the emotion stuff, like you not getting interviews and stuff, it may not be a reflection on you as a person, just the fact that this process is pretty nonsense.
Yeah. And there's, you know, there's ways you can try to mitigate the effects on you. So as mentioned, in terms of like HR not knowing the technical nuance, if someone refers, you will often go straight to the hiring manager, or tailoring your application can be helpful for those automated systems. So if you have a place you really want to apply to, maybe, and you see they list TensorFlow as a skill and you have that, maybe change it from saying neural networks on your resume to TensorFlow, because they do sometimes do these, they're called like ATS, applicant tracking system, just these keyword matches. But I think it is a good reminder though, that like, yeah, you can, there are ways to kind of play this game, but it is, yeah, it's a rough system.
Yeah.
Job searching sucks.
Yeah.
And I feel like we should have said that at the beginning.
Job searching sucks. We should have started with that. Yeah. It sucks. Yeah. Also, like a big company like Amazon is way more likely to use these sorts of systems than like a little tiny startup. Like, and so you can also kind of strategically apply to companies that are more likely to just give you a chance in the first place than, you know, Google or something. So there's some strategy there.
Yeah. Did you look at all the resume when you were hiring at Linati? Did you review all the resumes that came in?
We had a person who did the first pass, and I gave them actually a flow chart of like, if they kind of mentioned this, blah, 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 and then they would do a phone screen, and if they seemed good, then they would bring them to me. And I trusted that person quite a bit, but I also, if I wanted to, could have looked at all the resumes myself. I just chose not to. But that's probably, that probably is the relationship at a lot of jobs, of one person to kind of screen out to see if you have any likelihood of being a good fit. And then once you have a good fit, then you get passed to the possible manager. Do you want to go down further into the funnel?
Yeah. So what about the technical test?
Ooh. Yeah. I think this one is maybe a little bit harder to debug. Like sometimes there are companies that just have cruel and unfair technical tests, and they ask you, do a heap search over a binary tree. And it's just like, that's not a good test of what would make a good data scientist. And so sometimes it's just finding a company whose interview process and values more align with your skill set. And then also there is a certain amount of just like getting practice at what it is like to do an interview.
Yeah, I think this is where it's it's tricky, right? I mean, there's been like lots of people like blogging and tweeting about how technical tests can be broken. Like, I remember the person who invented Homebrew like failed Google's technical test, and they're like, "Well, 90% of your engineers use the software I make." But okay, yeah. But that being said, I think it's, you know, sometimes they'll just come out of like totally left field, right? And you're like, "All right, you know, I'm." Maybe if I spent 50 hours reading Cracking the Coding Interview and practicing, like, it will help me with 1 out of 10 tests, but that's not worth it. That being said, if you're like, oh, if you start seeing patterns, like, okay, most places are asking for to do a technical test in SQL, and, you know, I'm, like, pretty rusty on that. I would say that it's worth, like, because also if it's something where you're like, okay, I feel like in a few hours I could improve my skills and, you know, really, and this would be something that's probably going to come up in multiple interviews. I think that's worthwhile if it's these things that, like, you're like, I really don't think that this is related to a data set, you know, like doing this hashmap binary tree. Then I think that goes back to the emotions part and just like not putting that on you. And also remembering, like, even pretty senior people, you know, can fail technical tests. Like, partly I was reading because, like, they're farther from school where you do learn these sort of more, like, arbitrary type things. So don't beat yourself up about it.
Yeah. And I would say, so when I interview people, I don't ask tricky questions like that because I think that's ridiculous. Yeah. But when I have seen people fail my interview tests, which I think are reasonably fair, usually it's not because, if they'd only studied that one weird algorithm, they would have gotten it. It's much more like, oh, it's clear this person hasn't had that much experience in SQL. And this is a job that requires a lot of SQL. So it's not like, a lot of studying. It's kind of back to the first point of like finding the job that is the right fit for you, as opposed to trying to figure out how you can squeeze past the interview process of a job that's maybe not the best fit.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. Yeah, do we want to talk about any other parts of the process, or should we go to what's important?
The final round.
The final round.
Well, let's do the
okay,
and then the break, and then the yeah.
Oh, okay, the break.
Anyway, yeah, so the last part we have here, the last is like if you can't get to the final round where you're doing the technical and it feels like people are good and they're nodding in the interview and stuff, but you just aren't getting job offers. I think there's no, if that is the case, if you're like going to these technicals and they seem like they're going well and just, I think it's just a matter of time and luck. Like just keep trying it. Like there's not anything that should block you beyond that point, except sometimes someone else shows up who's just slightly better of a fit. And then it's just now you're in the spam 500 companies with resumes place of just like getting enough of your feelers out to find a company that's just the right combination of skills that they're looking for you.
Yeah. And it's funny because I definitely agree with that. That I had someone like a week ago say that they've been getting first round interviews and they've gotten to 2 final rounds and they just like, so they seem to be getting through the whole process. And the people have given them feedback that's like, oh, you know, we didn't go with you because you need more X experience. And I think that's kind of frustrating because like, this person never pretended that they had that experience. Like it was clear from their resume. So I don't know. I agree. I think if you're getting to the final rounds, it's just luck. One more thing we didn't talk about is the behavioral interviews. If you feel like you're doing well in the technical, for that, I would just say like practice. So if you can practice with a friend, because I think this is getting better at those, I think can be fairly field agnostic. Like there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of stuff out there like the STAR framework where it's like a situation, the situation you're in, the task, the action you took and the result when they're asking you about like, tell me a time when so-and-so happened. So I think they're practicing with people, coming up with a couple of your past projects or past experiences that you think could like work for a multitude of questions. I think with that, you shouldn't have to go out and get any more experience. I think if you're not doing well in the behavioral, it's just about like practicing how you approach it.
Yeah. And I will say for the last year, like the final round, they just aren't making it. I don't know if everyone understands how these things work at companies. Usually what happens is the hiring committee is like 5 people, usually of which everyone who interviewed you is the panel, but sometimes but generally the people interviewed, they generally how it works with companies, they all sit in a room, they talk about what they liked, they talk about what they don't like, and they decide if they're going to hire you or not. This is challenging because they often don't all agree on what is the right set of skills this person should need for this job. So if you have some people in the room saying, oh, they really got to be good with doing analyses on the fly and presenting them to other people, and you have other people who's like, no, the most important thing is if you can make code that runs in production, then you become the battleground for that intercompany politics. And so sometimes like getting to the final round of being like, oh, you just didn't have experience in blah, and you're like, yeah, I knew that up front. That was everyone who knew you didn't have experience in that area thought you'd be great anyway. But then in that meeting, the people who needed, demanded that kind of experience won out. Like, it's just, it's messy and it's not about you. So that's why I'm like, yeah, just keep rolling the dice on that one.
That, shall we take a break?
Yes. Okay, so the sponsor for this week, it goes as follows. You know, think about, you're at the local arcade collecting tickets from the games, and you're running out of coins. Will you have enough tickets to buy the big prize? Find out the answer with a time series analysis. With time series analyses, you can analyze the sequence of events like arcade ticket winnings and predict future values. This can help you understand a company's future sales, the growth of a country's population, or if you have enough tickets to buy that toaster before your parents come and tell you it's time to leave. Use offer code BESTTIME to analyze 3 extra data points on your next time series with time series analysis.
Just make me nostalgic for like arcades.
Yeah, I'm like, is this an outdated cultural reference?
No, it's not. I meant like pandemic nostalgic. No, I went to Dave & Buster's, I think, just a couple years ago.
Oh, well, there you go. I bet that Dave & Buster's is not doing great this pandemic.
No, probably not.
Okay, so anyway. So let's talk now about, like, for that first data science job, what are the things that are important to look for during this interviewing process?
Yeah, because we've said, right, like, the title I would not focus on. But obviously there's other stuff that is important. So I think for me, there are like a couple big things. So one is that it is a supportive environment for learning and that you have psychological safety. So psychological safety is basically the a concept that you feel safe in this environment to make mistakes and admit making mistakes because people won't shame you or fire you or whatnot. Because if you don't have that, it can be very hard, and it often leads to people being very afraid of failure. And so we've talked about in a previous episode, failure is an important and inevitable part of data science, especially when you're new. Like, you're going to be learning stuff, you're not going to know everything. And so I think you want to find a place that recognizes that, so that one, that they'll have support set up for you in terms of like teaching or mentoring. And also that, again, you don't, when things inevitably don't work out, you don't get blamed for it.
Yes, I think that is true. And I also think that, you know, kind of like companies that are hiring entry-level data scientists, they at some level, you know, you're going to get someone who's not an expert, right? That's kind of the point. Like, you are seeking out people that you know intentionally you're going to grow, which is also, I think, why, to your point earlier, companies are doing less entry-level data scientists and more other positions because they, you know, they don't want to put in the work as much. But that means that it's really valuable to really look at companies that are seeming to focus on hiring entry-level positions and try and like kind of really check to see in the interview process, does this seem like a place where they'd let me kind of learn and such? And I think, again, I think sometimes the bigger companies, they have less willingness to do that because there's such rigid structures and it's so like, you know, there's so many different organizations, it's also complicated. So you just don't know. And so I really think just this is something to worth pay attention to, and especially use the fact that if they are like trying to be like, oh, this company isn't hiring entry-level people, but I really like that company, so I'm going to apply anyway. Like, that's a dicey move because that makes it unlikely that they're going to have the psychological safety.
Yeah. So that's probably like a pretty non-technical thing. On the technical side, I would say it's important that either you'll get to do some programming in R or Python, because those are really like the two main language of data science, or if you're someone who like really hasn't worked with data much at all before, I think then it's like, you know, totally great to get experience with SQL and BI tools like Looker, Tableau, because you'll learn a lot just in terms of like what's, you know, the reality of very messy data at companies, like how to present it to people, working with other folks. But if you have some of that experience, I think then if you want to, you know, go into data science, getting that, like being on a team where you do some programming in R or Python is pretty important.
Yeah, I kind of, to like your earlier point, I also kind of think that those jobs that require R and Python are often likely to be the ones that aren't entry level. So I would consider the SQL Power BI world is a good starting place. And, you know, especially if you get sharp there and maybe do a little R in your Python in your free time, you know, I think that combination can be way better than waiting to get a job that starts in R and Python, and then you've lost all those months that you could have been doing SQL and gaining experience.
Yeah, I think it depends. So my job when I started, so my first data job was at Etsy. And in my case, I've been programming in undergrad and R and at Stats. So I think if folks are listening and you do have like, you know, a semi-traditional background, so like stats or quantitative social sciences, right? You've done some programming, you've worked with data, or maybe you've been a data analyst at a company. Then I think it's okay to start being like, okay, I think there are jobs out there for folks who have either relevant degrees or already have relevant experience in data to like go into R Python. But I think you're right. If you're like, I'm going to start from being a art history professor who've never worked with any kind of data before, then yes, I think like SQL and BI, like don't have like programming be this like really firm requirement, because just getting to work with any data will be really helpful.
Yeah. And I just think there are like 10 SQL analyst jobs for every one data science job. So just numerically, you're maybe better off starting there too. So,
yeah. But, and yeah, you can also find jobs that are a mix, right? Like Etsy was a mix of like, I did R and Python, but I also did some Looker stuff and a bunch of SQL stuff. So it's not either or. Yeah. And I think the last thing on that is, which kind of goes back to the entry level thing, is like you're more likely to find truly entry-level jobs on an established team with experienced data people. And I think that's really key. I would not recommend going in and being the first data person at a job. Like even if they'll hire you for it, I feel like that's just a recipe for misery.
Yeah. And I think if you apply to like Google or something, or, you know, some big company and they're like, oh, we're looking for a data scientist. Just because Google has lots of data scientists doesn't mean that team has lots of data scientists who are readily available. So it really is during the interview process, you want to kind of see if, like, ask to see who would be the people mentoring you, helping you, things like that. Because, yeah, being a data scientist, especially a junior one, without having people around to, like, work with and learn from, it's very challenging. And Emily and I talk all the time on this podcast about the pros and cons of being the first data scientist. But especially if you're just starting out and you're struggling with the interview process, you know, like, you're struggling to find a job, that's not a good recipe to then be the only data scientist.
Yeah. Shall we talk about what's not important?
Oh, I did put on our list of things that are important: money, location, blah 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 blah. Because like that stuff matters. Like sure. That's
yeah,
good.
Yeah.
Like don't
yeah. But I think you probably already know that. And I would say money, if you're able to, like, I would say for experienced people, like who say like you're the director of marketing or something, right? And you want to go into data, like you might have to take a pay cut if you're if you got pretty further along in another field and you want to transition, like, you might have to take a pay cut. And so I do think it's worth thinking about, okay, you know, what will set me up for in a couple years? Can I take a pay cut for a few years, maybe save a little less for retirement or whatever, so that I can transition? Because you're probably not going to be able to find a $180,000 job, you know, your first job in, if you don't, or who knows, maybe ever, but certainly your first job in, unless maybe you have a relevant PhD, in which case you're probably not listening to this.
Yeah, and I do think the location, like, it's just so different trying to find a data science job in Seattle versus Phoenix versus Boise. Like, they're can be dramatically different, and sometimes it could be a geographical thing that is slowing you down. So, but no, let's move on to what's not important. As you said, the title, not important to you, doesn't seem like it's a big deal. I also think you have this note here, and I'm going to talk about it because I agree with it 100%. A lot of times people are like, and I did this when I started my career. I'm like, I want to be a data scientist. Oh, we didn't call back that back then. I want to be a data scientist. I want to use cool math to devise new things and blah, blah, blah. And I had this such lofty idea of like, oh, just summarizing data is beneath me, or just making graphs is beneath me. I need to develop the models. And there just isn't that much work out there of developing new innovative models. And certainly if that work exists, your job is still probably 80% not that. And I think being really particular about like, ah, I'm not doing decision science, I'm not going to make analyses, it has to be putting stuff into production, or I'm not interested, that can really get your like your option set much, much lower. And especially for a first job, you don't know what you're going to like yet because you haven't done it as a job before. So it's good to have an open mind.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's really true what you said, right? Like, I feel like sometimes people can be like, why am I like working with stakeholders or stuff? I just want to like sit in a room and like code and do the cool things. And it's like, well, that's like you say, like that's a really core part of the job. And actually, I think, you know, getting that experience is valuable because as you get more senior, like more and more of your job becomes actually like meeting with other people, figuring out what the business needs, like selling it on that stuff. There's a really great book by Will Larson called Staff Engineer. And that's a big point of it, right? Like some staff engineers, so this is like usually like 7 to 10 years into an engineering career. I think it sort of holds for data science too. We get that title. And some of them say they barely code anymore, right? Because that's not their job anymore. Their job is to like help other people code, figure out what the business needs, et cetera, like be a technical advisor. So I think you'd be doing yourself harm if you were just like, no, I must like, you know, do the super researching, deep, you know, learning, all that stuff.
Yeah. Right. If it's not deep learning, I'm not taking the job. Like, ooh, yeah. Yikes.
Don't do that. Yeah. Should we take questions?
Yeah. So let's take a quick break first and then we'll do questions.
All right. So we've got a couple questions here. So the first one I'm going to ask is, someone asked, does a Kaggle Grandmaster have many job opportunities? So one, I'm not really sure. I pulled up this question because I do think it, so a Kaggle Grandmaster, right? So Kaggle, there are all these data science competitions. I think I've heard the term Grandmaster means you win some, I guess. Maybe, but the problem is that kind of shows like a pretty, that shows that you're pretty good, right, at like tuning machine learning models. But there's a lot more to the data science job than that. And I think that's actually why when we talk about portfolio projects, we recommend doing things like gathering your own data set, like figuring out your own question for it, exploring it, et cetera, because getting a clean data set with a well-defined question, with a well-defined metric of success, like that is sort of the last mile of most data science problems. And I think showing that you have the skills for all of the scaffolding needing to get to that point is really important.
Yeah, and a grandmaster in Kaggle, your job is to write code that is the most accurate as possible. But in industry, lots of times you have to decide between, should this code be more accurate or should it be easier for another team to run, or blah, blah, blah. Like, oh, or the dependencies are going to be difficult to manage, blah, blah. And Kaggle, you don't really have to think about any of that, or not to level of industry. And so it's just tricky, and that's not. So Kaggle is insufficient, I would say, as a starting point to, then you will get a job.
Okay. And so another question is, this person says, you know, they don't think there's enough coverage on how experience, so they mean like 20 plus years of, I guess, work experience, professionals transition into data science. So someone with, say, industry and functional experience who's completed recently a data science certificate program or bootcamp. And so are there some key pieces of advice for experienced / older people transitioning to data science?
So I think that the best thing you can do is try and figure out how can you take those 20 years of work and try and turn that into something that people will be like, ah, I see how that could be useful for data science, right? So if you were like a mechanical engineer, you know, talk about how you had to take data and use that to understand how well the gears will work. I don't know mechanical engineering, but like the more you can kind of show the value of that, I think that's helpful. And then, yeah, I think exactly what you already said around like boot camps, like show that you have learned the new knowledge as it's for this job and show, hey, the older stuff you had is still valuable and relevant. That plus a sprinkle of like do projects and have a GitHub and blah, blah, blah. I think that's kind of the best recipe for people in that situation.
Yeah. I'd also recommend if you can, like, let's say if you like are getting a certificate or courses on the side, right? You're still working. Let's say you're like a marketing director, you're still working. Like if you can start applying that to your job now, I think that's a really great way to get experience. So say you're a marketing director, you're getting these skills. You're like, okay, how can I change the reports I'm making in Excel to start using in R or Python? How can I start making better data visualizations? And then I think that way, that's another way to help sell yourself, okay, because you're sort of like gradually going into it, right? And you're still using your domain knowledge. And I would say, in addition to thinking like Jacqueline said about like, how do I translate what I did into data terms? I think it's easier, say you were working in healthcare, to find a job as a healthcare data scientist, because then you can pretty directly leverage that domain knowledge that you have versus say trying to jump industries right away.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. What's next? Let's go. Yeah.
All right. Next we have someone's asking, how would we know or infer if the position you're interviewing for is a safe environment? Could we explicitly ask for it? So I think this is back to like that psychological safety learning environment.
I have an opinion on this. It is astounding the amount of stuff you can just ask in an interview. Like, I think it's easy to think, well, can you ask that? But you can. You can ask anything. And one of those things can absolutely be, what do you do to foster an environment for data scientists to thrive, right? Because, like, that's not accusatory, not like, what do you have? But, like, just like, what, like, help, like show me some examples of things you do to help people in my situation. And a good company will be like, oh, yeah, we do blah, blah, blah. And let me tell you about this other junior data scientist. And now they're blah, blah, blahing thanks to our help. And a bad team will be like, oh, we don't really think about that. Or like, oh, we expect you to learn it on your own, right? Like, the more they're like, oh, just do it on your own, like, the less psychologically safe it probably is.
Yeah. And I think it's really good there how you phrase it, looking for, like, specific examples. Because you don't want to ask, like, do you have a psychologically safe environment? Because, like, probably people are just going to say, yeah, yeah, like, you know, if there's, like, a right answer to it. So ask how they do it. I'm also looking at, so at the end of each chapter of a book, we have an interview. And Michelle Keem, who's the head of data science, machine learning at Pluralsight, did our chapter on failure. And we actually sort of like asked about this. And so she said she recommended, like, when you're interviewing, the type of things you can ask are also like, what are you learning yourself to your interviewer? Like, what have you learned recently? How did that opportunity arise? How would I get feedback in this role? Is it something you have to seek out or is it formalized? So, yeah, I think you can, you might also, we talked about this at some point, Jacqueline, like sometimes you might have to read between the lines a little bit, right? Like it's pretty rare. Someone's like, or like, it's a big bad sign, right? Like, it's very rare someone will be like, oh yeah, this place is awful to work for. Everyone's super mean and like, you know, like you won't hear that directly in the interview. So I think one way to read between the lines is like making people give specific past examples, because those can be like hard to make up on the spot versus just it being easy to say like, oh yeah, you know, we're a great team.
Yeah. And I think with that, it looks like we're about at the end of our show for today. You ready to call it, Emily? You're making a face.
Yeah. Oh, no. I'm just looking at there's some other questions coming in. Shall we take one more question?
Okay, but it's lightning round.
Okay. Lightning round. Okay. If you're an experienced professional like 20 years, could you target data science managerial roles?
I would be careful with that. I think managing is a totally different experience. And if you haven't done data science before, jumping right into data science management is tricky. I don't think it's impossible, but I would describe that as tricky.
Agreed. Yeah, even if you've been a manager to in other departments. Yeah. Okay, and last time around, what kind of project do you think is cool to have on GitHub?
Just something that's not the Titanic data that everyone's analyzed. Make it real. Make it about you. Make it like something personal.
Something you're interested in. Yeah, something you're interested in. Having an app is great. That's awesome. Yes, okay. Now we can wrap up.
Okay, so that's our show for this week. Check out our next episode, which is about quitting a job gracefully, which is like the opposite of this one. Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed the show, please leave us a review. If you have a question, you can email us at podcast@bestbook.cool. You can buy a copy of the book at bestbook.cool and use the offer code BUILDBOOK40% for 40% off. Our theme song is by the extremely funny Matt Bouchel, and thanks to our publisher Manning for helping this book exist.
And may you enjoy all your conferences.